Hello. Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm William Gallagher. Our sponsor this week is Sanebox. More about that later. And joining me for a week that still hasn't seen any new iPads, but is still bursting with news about just about everything else, is Wes Hilliard. Wes, actually, are you able to talk, or is the pain from the Vision Pro black eyes just too much for you?
Yeah, I wanted the headline for that to be Steve Jobs punches you in the eye when you wear the Apple Vision Pro wrong, but it didn't work out.
Okay. Right.
He just comes from beyond the grave to tell you you're wearing it wrong, very violently.
Have you been wearing it wrong?
Well, that's the thing. This, if you want to jump right in, this story is so funny. It's... Okay, so nothing against the person who got the black eye issue. I totally get it. It's a new device. You don't know exactly what you're doing. But one of the first things I did when I did the demo was they said you should not, you know, feel pain when you're wearing the headset. Not only that, it should be somewhat rested and comfortable. But whoever got the black eyes kept tightening and tightening the fit band, I guess, until it just squeezed their head to oblivion. And some people just have really bruisable skin. I mean, I've known people you can poke in the arm and it turns purple an hour later. So this, it could have just been something like that. And the faces are especially bruisable. So I'll give them that. But again, the Vision Pro should not be squeezing your head. It should be resting equal weight across the brow and the cheekbones, really. But if you feel too much weight on the cheekbones, it means you're wearing it wrong.
Part of me does want to ask about why you go around poking people to find out if they're going to bruise an hour later, but another part of me doesn't. Except you have, in a strange way, perhaps that's a pastime. You've reminded me, the Apple Insider Plus this week for paid subscribers, it's all about planning for travel, how we use this gear and technology to plan our strange holiday ideas later. But stepping back a bit, there's this person who gets a black eye. They take the headset off, and what do they say? You should see the other spatial persona. Like, black enough to be like they've been in a fight, or is it really just, you know, discovery?
Honestly, I wish Apple could let us store different personas like they do different emojis, so that I could have, like, you know, if I, for some reason, I was, like, in a bicycle accident and I just had a really messed up face, I could just save that for when I didn't want to come to work and just call in and say, I'm sorry, I can't do it today, but...
Friend's actually just been in Vietnam, and she rides a motorbike, had a horrible accident, came off, but then she had to go into schools, She said she had to wear a hat and an eye patch to stop scaring the children she was working with. And she didn't do that for me. She sent me the photograph of the poor woman's face. Yeah, okay.
Right.
That's my nightmare for the rest of the week, but okay.
I will say, for anyone curious, as far as Apple Vision Pro fit goes, if it doesn't feel comfortable, it's wrong. Go to an Apple store. I know that's a lot to ask, especially for a lot of people, but it's only available in the United States, so I can safely say you're probably near an Apple store. Even if it's a couple hours, it's worth the trip. You spent $3,500 on this thing. It should be comfortable. Go get the right band, go get the right visor. The face scanning thing is pretty accurate, but it's not always 100%. Sometimes you go to the store and find out you can wear a different size, maybe a little bigger, and it makes the world of difference. This woman, I think, did the same thing, and as soon as she changed out what she needed to, it fits and it works fine. Again, it's just, I think a lot of people complaining of discomfort, headaches, stuff like that, it shouldn't be painful. Now, there is a few days of adjustment, especially for people who've never wore a headset, or especially for people who never wore glasses before. Mm-hmm. If you've just never had anything on your face, you're not going to know what that feels like. Your body's going to need to adjust. There's muscles in your neck that are used for supporting your head that are getting a workout because you've added 2 pounds to your head. I know that sounds ludicrous, but it's true. Any amount of weight, you put on a hat, you've never wore a hat before, you grow your hair too long, suddenly your muscles are doing a different kind of work and it's going to be a little sore. So there's an adjustment period for anyone, really. And Apple says if you notice a discomfort during that adjustment period, to only wear the headset for about 30 minutes. But you build up those muscles, you get your skin used to the pressure, and you don't have to worry about it. Me personally, I've never run into blemishes or bruises or anything like that. My face is pretty used to this kind of stuff because I wear headsets before.
Right. And sorry, just to check, you do occasionally look in a mirror. right? Mm-hmm. It's not that you don't have mirrors around, so you could, yeah, okay. That woman who went back and changed things, or people who could, do we know if Apple charges for replacements? Is it like in a warranty period thing?
If it's an exchange, it's just an exchange.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, the you definitely don't want to pay for a light seal unless you just want an extra one. And this is also another note. If you have someone else in your household who wants to use Vision Pro, they need their own visor cushion and face shield or light seal, because again, the same issue persists. Unless you have identical bone structure and your heads are shaped similarly, you're going to have a different experience wearing it, and you want both of you to be comfortable. Spend the $100 to get the other light seal. It's worth it.
I have this impression that Apple, it's not like it's one for one person, but it's a bit of a pain sharing it with somebody. Am I right? Are you able to?
It's your device. It's the iPad model, but even more so, because yeah, you can unlock an iPad and hand it to someone and they can do what they want. You know, parents know this everywhere. They'll hand their young child an iPad to get them away from them for an hour. And
yes.
That's the norm, but you're not going to hand your child a Vision Pro. I mean, as long as they're over 13, that's safe. It's not good for your eyes. Don't do that. And I know some parents with like 10-year-olds that have Oculus, and I'm just like, you understand they're going to lose their eyesight, correct? But in any case,
okay. Right.
Yeah, it's actually like, this is one of those, it's not, you know, you only use 10% of your brain kind of stuff. It's like medical science says you're eye development is really in like rapid fire mode until you're about 13, and if you do anything to interrupt that, you're basically guaranteed to get some sort of nearsightedness. And that's why Apple put in that feature for screen time, because kids are sitting so close to their iPads. I forget the medical term for it, but it's where you get nearsighted because you're too close to screens all day. And that's why you can't have VR headsets unless you're over the age of 13, because you could force yourself to need glasses very quickly.
I have no idea about any of that. Wow.
But I was going to say, as far as the iPad or as versus Vision Pro goes, it's even more personal. The scan isn't like Face ID. Sure, it's still a passcode, but once you're in, it's just modeled to that person's head. Right, it'd be like if an Apple Watch only fit the other person, right? It's a very personal device. Not that I would say everyone in a house needs to buy one. Again, get your own face shield and stuff and it's fine, but it's not like there's user accounts on this thing either. So I live in a household where I don't have anyone else wanting to use it more than just passing fancy, oh, let me try this app, let me watch this video. But yeah, if anyone needed full-time computing with Vision Pro and in a shared environment, I'm not sure how that would work. It wouldn't be ideal anyway.
So actually, it's as far away from a Mac as you can get. You can't have quick user switching.
I think
not that I ever have.
Apple prefers users.
Yeah, it makes sense. I know people get very confused on a Mac by the fact that you have to log in and where some of the files are because of different users. And they're never going to have a different user. It's their own device. So I'm kind of two directions on this.
I don't really understand my girlfriend's mentality here, because I've tried having like household Macs. I've had a Mac set up in the living room with like her Apple ID signed into her own user account, Touch ID able to sign her in automatically, all of that. Would never use it, not once. She just prefers she prefers her iPad.
I thought you were going to say she's a PC user, in which case, okay.
No, she has her own little. So I actually created a miniature version of my desk setup for her. So she has a monitor, keyboard, mouse hooked up through a dock in her little space downstairs, and she's able to connect her iPad with a single cable and have a full desk setup like I do. And she just prefers that to a Mac, I suppose. So weird world. Maybe I've rubbed off on her. I don't know.
I feel like we're kind of spreading out, touching on a couple of areas, because I mean, you mentioned there's working on it. There's different types of apps. The passing fancy and just watching videos and things. Let's go with video first, because after you complained that there was only, was it a 5 or 10 minute football thing for Vision Pro released after months of waiting? Now we have the promise of another dinosaur or two.
Another 5 minute episode of Prehistoric Planet for Vision Pro, yes.
Right, I can hear the thrill in your voice there. But you liked it, didn't it?
Yes. No, I really enjoyed Prehistoric Planet. The models kind of fall down in 3D. Like the actual, you've watched the actual documentary, correct, on Apple TV Plus?
No, actually I've seen only bits of it.
But, highly recommend it. I mean, you know, just getting David Attenborough talking about dinosaurs is just, right. It's worth the price of admission. It's amazing. But in any case, good documentary on Apple TV Plus. The models, of course, still fake. Dinosaurs don't, they're not alive. sorry to break it to you. Yeah, the models on Apple TV Plus are impressive enough. You can still tell they're CGI, but they're very well done. They're definitely the best I've seen, even compared to the silliness that Jurassic Park tries to pull off with their current CGI models. But you get into Vision Pro with the 3D space, 180-degree video. The models are very clearly almost video game characters. They're not. It's not that they're worse detailed. It's just because when they're in three dimensions, you get to Uncanny Valley much faster, and that plane breaks. So it's still an enjoyable little documentary. The first one with pterosaurs was silent. There's some music and stuff. You got to look around and see dinosaurs kind of hanging out.
But they didn't speak.
No David Attenborough. I guess they didn't pay him.
Oh,
for
I see. I was thinking dinosaurs cracking jokes. The T-Rex has the best lines, but no, none of
no,
that.
No, I love the TV show Dinosaurs, if you've never seen that one.
Oh, good God, I've forgotten about that.
Oh, it's a perfect TV show. Go watch it, everyone. In any case, yeah, no notes, especially the one where you get to throw your mother-in-law off of a cliff when she reaches a certain age. I will say, that is an episode of Dinosaurs. I enjoyed the little thing. Again, it feels like a demo. It's a 5-minute video. This is not what's it called? Not interacting with dinosaurs. There's the app thing.
Planet. No.
Yeah. Well, there's an app that you can launch on Vision Pro that lets you kind of watch a dinosaur fool around in this space. Very similar to the Prehistoric Planet thing, but it's more interactive. The different dinosaurs kind of track your head, and as you move around and reach out with your hand, it'll snap at your hand. That was an interactive one. This is not interactive. It also feels a little more like a demo. It's 5 minutes. The first one was pterosaurs. They're kind of hanging out. There's like some raptors come in and try to mess around and eat one. And again, it feels more video gamey. It was fine. It wasn't actually a documentary. It was just, here you are in this space. And again, not to you know, say it's bad. It's just not. Again, it's not very much. And so we're getting a second episode about Triceratops or whatever. Great. I love those guys. It's going to be fun to go in and look. Again, another little 5-minute experience. There's not going to be anyone speaking. Something's going to happen. A T-Rex is probably going to come in and ruin their fun eating grass. But great. It's just, I wonder how long until the first full length. The closest thing to a full length real anything was the Alicia Keys bit, because that one was actually, I believe, 20 minutes long, and it was really nice. It was, of course, just listening to her sing and talk to her coworkers and stuff. And the adventure one was very captivating. So, like, the adventure and the wild, they're single word names, funny enough. Adventure and Wild were also very captivating because, again, they were documentary styles. Someone was narrating. You got to look around and see these environments you've never seen before. Prehistoric Planet feels very much more demo-like in the fact that it's just you're kind of sitting there watching these animals interact, and it's fine. But all of that said, I was going to say is, Apple, come on. Step up the game. I understand we're still in the early days of Vision Pro, but if we don't get like a sizzle reel of a few more things coming in the fall, I'm going to start saying, what's going on over there?
It's far too early to tell with only two data points, but these were kind of about a month apart. 3.5 weeks, 4.5 weeks, somewhere around there. Do you think we're actually seeing a monthly release of 5 minute?
Well, I think you're mass off there, William. The first episode was available on February 2nd when the Apple Vision Pro launched.
I'm thinking of the football one that we had.
Yeah, that was actually 2 weeks ago. You're all messed up on time, aren't you?
Ah, timey-wimey stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all jealousy because I can't watch any of it. No, really, of that's what it comes down to. So, yeah, let's rub that in a bit more.
Two months for a 5-minute video featuring no voice actors. And we saw in the sizzle reel there is more live action stuff. That I want to swim with the sharks. I want to fly in a hot air balloon. Like, all of that looks amazing. But again, it's just odd to me. Even this is something I've said before. Apple really needs to get on the Hollywood bandwagon of at least giving us dates. You know, they announced a sequel to a movie the other day. I can't remember which. It's not important. Saying it'll be out in 2026. I'm like, great. At least now I know when to expect that movie. I mean, I understand that it takes a long time to produce movies. Maybe people don't like that they're, you know, getting teased out that long. But for me, honestly, I'm happy to at least know it's coming and have a date. Yes, that date can move. Often they do. But great. I'm happy to know that it's coming. Apple just does not do that. There are times we get PR in about a new TV series launching on Apple TV Plus 2 days before it's going to premiere. And that's just very odd to me. How does anyone know? Why? No one cares at that point. Oh, well, I guess I'll subscribe at some point and watch it. But if you build up the anticipation, at least they'll have a reason to maybe get ready for it, pre-subscribe, go watch the seasons, you know, season one and two before season three comes out, all of that stuff. Nope, here it is. Go ahead. No fanfare. And I think Apple needs to fix that side of their entertainment division.
Well, I think they are, because the Steve Martin two-part documentary got a huge amount of press. I think not very long before it, but at least a month. So certain
some space.
Tentpole things are doing it. But we've talked entertainment, we've talked dinosaurs, basically. We've even mentioned sport. That was great. What about the fact that this week you and Mike Worthley wrote the best apps the iPad Pro, and it included some of these, but you also included productivity things, and that's the thing. That's what would sell me on Apple Vision Pro in the end, what I could actually work on it with. So what are the best productivity apps around that you're actually using, would you say?
Well, this was a difficult one to write, honestly, because again, the platform's so early that the stuff you want is either not there or it's there in compatibility mode. And that's kind of the state of things. So going through what I've already installed and finding, like, here's the actual Vision Pro native apps that I'm using that are essential was difficult. Because there's so few, but the ones that are there are quite excellent. So I pointed out a couple. Of course, Widgetsmith got a mention. Glance Bar is a great app, but again, not productivity related. I mean, I guess that one kind of is, because you can see your reminders and calendar. I hope that one gets more configurability soon, because Glance Bar doesn't show me exactly what I want to see from those apps. So I think more is coming. It's one of those single developer kind of things. But I did find Bezel is a cool one, because you can bring your iPhone and iPad in to Vision Pro, streaming this display. Basically, it's not interactive, so you still have to interact through your physical device, but it at least lets you see it within Vision Pro, because if you try to look at a device screen through Vision Pro, it's not impossible, just difficult.
I hadn't thought of that. Of course. Okay, interesting. That's a thought. If somebody phones me and I'm wearing a headset Pro, Vision Pro, does it accept the calling? I mean, a regular phone call, the way my Mac will say my phone is ringing.
I think, see, I haven't had that happen yet. I think the answer is no currently.
How few phone calls we all get these days compared to everything else. But yeah,
FaceTime,
there's probably Apple going, oh yeah, we should look into that.
Yeah, like FaceTime and stuff obviously works, but if an actual phone number calls in, I believe it doesn't pass through. There's something broken there. I just remember someone mentioning that. I haven't had the experience myself, so I can't say for sure. But I remember seeing on social media that could have been fixed in the last update. I just haven't had an opportunity to test that. It's not something I... Honestly, though, if I get a phone call and I'm not doing anything too important, I'll just take the headset off and go walk around on the phone, right? Like,
makes sense.
Unless I'm just pressed to answer the phone and the headset, you know. It's. I remember a lot of people kind of worrying about, you know, seeing the video of the woman on the couch talking to their friend. In that situation, I would just take the headset off. It's so easy to take off and put on, and there's no boot up time or anything. Just take it off. But
one thing
I did mention...
go
ahead.
After you. No, after you.
I said I did mention Pete Calc. So nothing y'all haven't heard here before.
Pete Calc, yes.
That we've discussed. Useful tools. The one thing that I didn't mention, because it's not out yet, that you know, this is an Apple Insider podcast exclusive, is an app called Super Copy. It's coming. I asked the developer the other day, Finn Voorhees, son of John Voorhees, if anyone knows.
Oh.
So he has an app coming called Super Copy. It's a Safari extension. It's absolutely essential. Anyone with Vision Pro knows that the address bar in Safari does not like being clicked on or copied or pasted out of for some reason. It's a bug, but it may never go away. Who knows? So Super Copy lets you just basically assign through a Safari extension a keyboard shortcut, Shift Command C, to automatically grab the URL of the page you're on. This, I use this dozens of times a day. No joke. So keep an eye out for that app. That's an absolute essential.
Okay, I think I liked about the feature was that, yes, we're still saying it's not a gigantic pot, but it was still not possible to cover everything. So I don't think, unless, did I miss this? The feature didn't touch on to-do apps, for example. So OmniFocus is famously there from the start. I believe Things right. 3 is, but I don't know whether Things 3 is native or just iPad stuff. But they're like, already there's enough
Things
really
3
good
is
stuff.
There. So I will say from the perspective of the article, and I think I made this clear, is this was mostly apps that I've interacted with. I didn't want to just offer up like, oh yeah, this exists. Anyone can go to the App Store and see what's there. So I mean, if you're a Things 3 user and you have a Vision Pro, you already know it's there. You've downloaded it. I just wanted to offer up at the very least utilities and things that people maybe haven't heard of or things to go look at, because again, I'm not going to convince or remind, like, the purpose of the article isn't to say, oh, you're a reminders user. No, go get OmniFocus or go get Things 3.
Although I'd be okay with that. Yeah.
Right. The purpose was to say, you already have Vision Pro. You've already installed the apps you like. Here's some apps you may not have that will improve your utility on Vision Pro.
I got the impression, really, that you're demonstrating the range, really, mm-hmm. the fact that there is this widespread stuff. There are things there I would never touch because I would never get around to them in any other place. But there are others where it did add to the little list of why I should get an Apple Vision Pro. And I tell you, daily that goes up and down.
Did anything?
The black guy has sorted it out. Right?
Anything jump out at you as, I got to get that or I want to try that out?
Well, at the time I was reading it, I also heard about the black eyes thing, so I stopped abruptly. But it sounds to me like I actually just made a note of that Super Copy thing for it. That's the kind of thing I would never have come across by accident, would never have thought to look at, would have just griped about the problems that not knowing there was a solution. So right there, even now, I should have a chart day by day of pros and cons for buying Apple Vision Pro. The only thing is, what happens if it comes to the UK on a day where I'm one ahead on the Pro,
mm-hmm.
And have £3,500 lying around? It's a complicated thing.
Of course.
But I get very encouraged by you because of the fact that you're still using it constantly. I know other people who've done what I fear I would do, which is enjoy it for a bit, then put it away. But you're getting actual work done, and I think that's what it has to be able to give me to make it work.
I found a happy medium. Because before I was working on it constantly, like my shift would be spent with Vision Pro, but I've also had more work outside of Vision Pro, photography related for reviews. If I'm reviewing an object, I'm not going to use it through Vision Pro. I'm going to sit there and use it, but then and take notes. Yeah. But I'm not going to put the Vision Pro back on to take notes. So that's why it's still good for me to have a somewhat dedicated desk setup for my iPad. So I'll be working from my iPad to get certain social media things done, take notes on reviews, get up to take photographs. But when I know for a fact, and this is pretty much almost daily still. It's just not an entire 8-hour shift. So once I get to the part of my shift where I know I'm just going to be writing and I'm going to be creating images and focusing on news and inside pages and all that stuff we discussed before, Vision Pro goes on and that's where I'm spending my time. But I'm finding circumstances where it's like, okay, if this was a lighter set of like AR glasses with perfect pass through, sure, I would just use it for all computing all the time. But right now I'm not going to review a wallet through Vision Pro. I want to be able to see it and look at it and discuss it and stuff like that and photograph it and not have a thing on my face when I do that. So it's not going away from my workflow, but it's definitely found its place. It's found its niche. It's not, I'm not trying to force it into positions it shouldn't be.
This episode is brought to you by AI email management tool, Samebox. Actually, later in this episode, you're going to hear Wes and I talking about how you can get in touch with all of us. And one key answer for us both is email. I adore email. But I do know that that's quite rare. I know for most people, email is a burden and often an enormous burden on top of everything else they have to do. And to be fair, even I, much as I love it, sometimes I do wish that ceaselessly filling inbox would please sort itself out for me automatically in some way, or just slow down a bit, or just give me a break for a while. And it can. It can do all of that because of Samebox. For one thing, Samebox learns from you as you use your email. You train Samebox as you go. So say you never read an email from your boss, but you always file it away into a special folder just in case you're asked about it. Well, Samebox will learn that and it will just do it for you. Or those email newsletters that you are sure you didn't actually subscribe to, but you also have a feeling if you click their big unsubscribe button, what you're actually doing is telling somebody that your address is real, so they will add you to more spam lists. Not anymore. With Samebox, you click once and that newsletter is gone forever. Let them try sending you more if they like. You'll never know and you will never be interrupted again. There are just so many features for helping you out with incoming email, which I think is the most important thing. But also there are so many for when you're the one sending the email out, such as, say you know, right, you're going to have to chase a particular recipient for something. They never come back to you on time. Well, email him or her as normal. But BCC an address like 1week@samebox.com. Do that. And if your recipient does get back to you within a week, well, great. But if not, Samebox will. Samebox will remind you that you are still waiting for this person. So until then, you can put them out of your head and get on with your work, knowing you won't forget them, knowing you won't forget anything, knowing that Samebox has it all in hand. Samebox is PC Magazine's top productivity tool of 2024, and it has just this slew of other features to help you stay on top of your email. Find out for yourself. Find out how Samebox can help your time and your concentration with a free 2-week trial. Visit samebox.com/insider today to start your free trial and get a $25 credit. That's samebox.com, samebox.com/insider. And our thanks to Samebox for supporting the Apple Insider podcast. You said just that you mentioned about using an iPad, and we've talked about this before, the fact that you are an iPad man who came to Vision Pro. So to you, it's very much like a version of the iPad, and the ecosystem's the same. But speaking of actual iPads, we are still waiting for these constantly new rumoured things. I mean, we've had regulatory references to them. Now, it must be real. Where's my iPad? Come on, Wes, you know. What's happening?
Well, it looks like May. And it's funny because this has happened before. When we rely on rumours to predict things, I would say a vast majority of rumours come from the supply chain, because you can't keep a secret like that. That it's hundreds of, or if not thousands of people building components, and there's this one guy that builds that puts the screws in for the camera module on the new iPad or whatever, and he goes home and tells his wife, and his kid overhears it and takes it to school, and then this 16-year-old with a Weibo account posts saying that they've heard from the grapevine that there's a new thing coming soon, yada yada. You think I'm exaggerating? Honestly, I think that's how a lot of this stuff happens. It's just friends, relatives, family members. A lot of people, because of China's industrialization, a lot of family works in these kinds of factories. Foxconn has entire cities dedicated to factories. So again, so many people are touching these things on a daily basis. It's going to get out, but they don't have the details. They don't know what it's going to be called. They don't know usually what color it's going to be. It hasn't, like, they don't know a lot of detail other than it's being made, it's going through this process. I overheard a manager saying that we're going to get so many units to America by this day. Great. We've known that the iPads have been shipping, the iPad Airs at least, have been shipping since December. So that gave us the idea that they would be a spring event, and it never came. And so a lot of this stuff can be made through conjecture, and that's why dates can move. And that's why a lot of people get frustrated at rumors, but they're not concrete. Now we're talking about May. I personally think, honestly, It could be all the way till WWDC, but that sounds a little too packed. So that's why, even though Apple never announces anything in May, we could see something actually this time, and we'll get some new hardware.
I'm never going to expect hardware at WWDC, and I'm occasionally wrong, but generally speaking, I'm just... That's all we've... Yeah, it could
I think
be.
You've been proven wrong like the last 4 years here. It used to be the case that WWDC was only for software, but Apple's silicon changed that paradigm, and now they're doing pro Mac hardware at WWDC. Oh,
I think they've done it all, though, so I'm going to go back to it. Unless they change their mind and surprise us with an Apple car, we were kidding, here it is. Mm-hmm. Oh, Tim Cook drives out onto stage before saying, good morning. And this is the best Apple car we've ever made. You know, that's the only kind of hardware I think is even conceivable. And you're just looking at me now for a little bit. One thing about dates moving and rumours. I think sometimes we hear a rumour so often that we assume it's true, even though it's actually the one rumour being repeated by a lot of people for it.
Or being repeated by the same person.
Oh,
honestly.
True. Yeah. I think also an assumption... I might be going overspeaking this, but I think there might be an assumption that Apple releases things when they're ready, when they've got them made. And I think actually, no, nobody wants to make something and sit on it for a year, but they actually time the releases for all sorts of purposes. When is the moment that it will get the maximum attention and the greatest number of sales? It's why the iPhone moved to September after all those years of being June, July. So I can well believe that Apple is poised, ready to go. But still, shipping from December and not releasing to May, that's got to be a very big warehouse somewhere, a bit of a Raiders of the Lost Ark-sized warehouse with this stuff.
Maybe they were ready to go, and then that bridge went down south of Baltimore, and they decided, you know what, that's too much of an interruption to our supply chain, got to move it back. I mean... I joke, but honestly, a lot of stuff can happen. There was an earthquake in Taiwan that could have interrupted part of the supply chain. There's always something, and I agree with you. Like they don't release things just because they're ready. Because if that was the case, the iPad Air would have released in December. It's more so: is the supply chain ready? Do they have enough back stock to meet orders? Is there a holiday nearby that's going to allow them to make some money? May is a weird release cycle. It doesn't really address any real holidays. It doesn't really address upgrade cycles. I think at this point, they just need them to get out there. And there are changes coming in iPadOS that would give away the hardware. So it has to come out before WWDC. So I think it makes sense that they need to announce it before then, or else like they're going to spoil themselves, more or less. An always-on display, for example, bringing standby to iPad before the always-on display came out would be just a dead giveaway that OLED was definitely happening, that this device was just, again, it would be silly. So I expect we're going to hear about them anytime between now and June. Press releases can drop at any time. They could drop as we speak tomorrow. And Oops Podcast is out. Kind of like last week when we released a podcast and an hour later emulator news dropped. So that was interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I've got to ask you about that. But I know when we talk about Apple stuff, generally, apart from things the company's doing, usually we're interested in the devices, the end result. But just from time to time, I get really interested in the logistics of how things move around. Because do you remember the story of what Tim Cook did with the first iMac? Do you know how he's quite a brilliant little move he did?
No.
Well, stop me if you remember this. I can't remember when this had been, late 1990s. So I don't think Tim Cook had been there very long, but he was running the logistics side. And before the iMac was ready, he booked air freight around Christmas time for all of it, whatever volume it was going to be. He paid in advance, booked all of that air freight, and that did two things. Apart from one thing, it must have given people ulcers thinking we would be ready. But they were. But it also stopped any other competitor getting any airspace at all for it. So the iMac had like a clear run just because it was physically able to be moved somewhere.
Kind of like buying every three nanometer chip available in existence for like 2 years straight.
Yes, so Apple is still doing it. I mean, actually, no, you said there are other examples, aren't there, of buying up certain, I think it was processors before. They are, because they have the money and they can do it, but they also have the foresight to do it.
It's funny.
They are able to get this right.
It's funny you mention air freight because Apple's moving away from that. They want to ship most of their iPhones by sea now, so.
Good point. And in smaller and smaller packages, which I guess, yeah, well, it is green, but it also means more items. But you're surprised they haven't done it before.
I guess that honestly, that kind of makes sense if we think about it. So the Tim Cook effect, if we want there to be millions and millions of iPads in the United States, but it's all coming by sea, I would start shipping them in December, not February, right? If we're waiting for all of these devices to come and they're going to need a long lead time. So maybe that's why we're getting so many weird indications from the supply chain lately of, oh, this stuff's impending. Normally, when this happens, it's a month away or it's a week away. So it could be any day now. There's regulatory databases popping up showing these devices, yada, yada. And it's like, no, actually, that was because they were using airplanes at the time and they were a week away. But now it's all being shipped by sea. So we're getting the same indications, but we're not treating it as a seagoing vessel. And we're going to need months, not weeks, to ship all of these devices. So maybe we need to adjust a little bit of our prediction algorithm here, I think.
It's actually a book. I've just had to look it up. 90% of Everything. Who would have written it? Rose George would have written that one. About shipping, particularly, well, ships do shipping. I find it bothersome that... something that's transported by ship is called a cargo. Something that's sent by car is called a shipment and things like that. But shipping containers, 90% of everything, every good is sent by ship. So it wouldn't make a big leap for it to be 91% and they add all of Apple's stuff. But that means somewhere out there in the world, hopefully not near Suez Canal or anywhere that gets blocked up suddenly, there are iPads sitting there throbbing. Okay. They're going to be out of date, aren't they?
That's why it's my favorite. Story, and Apple Insider doesn't publish these. If we do publish these, it's us saying this isn't true. But my favorite story is last minute change to iPhone design. And I'm just like, last minute? They figured this out in November. Like the iPhone 16, they knew what it was going to look like, the finalized product was ready at the end of November. Yeah. Like there's no way they're changing their mind now. But people don't realize, just like I was saying about shipments requiring long lead times, rumors also have long lead times because usually what we're hearing from the supply chain and from people is about 3 to 6 months old. So again, that might have just happened when the rumor first started 6 months ago, and we're only just hearing about it. So again, you gotta really pay attention to what you're reading here.
I am conscious that every time Tim Cook does say it, every time, this is the best iPhone we've ever made. There's a bit of me that's thinking at that moment he knows everything about the next iPhone, and there's got to be a bit of him that thinks, well, it's all right, really, but wait till next time.
In 2019, Tim Cook knew what the Vision Pro was going to look like and when it was going to show.
Oh, yeah.
In 2021, Tim Cook knows what the robotic arm looks like that operates the HomePod speaker that follows you around the room, right? It's being the CEO of the richest company in the world must have the wildest perks, like to be the fly on the wall in these rooms where he's seen dozens of prototypes that will never exist. He probably has an air power mat on his desk right now. So it's just funny to think about. We see all these patents, all these things come through, and research and development is spending billions of dollars on stuff every year. What could he be seeing that we will never see? And I would love it if he could retire and write a book before he dies and just tell us all the nonsense. But of course, all of the laws in place will never allow that to happen. So I just feel like maybe we'll just never know. It's like we'll never see inside Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
No, it's sad. But speaking of patents and things, I was reading patent applications this morning, and it was filed a couple of months ago. But there was one I read today about a car door. I thought, I mean, they painted a car door? It's actually the frame around it, and what does the door go in? I started to get interested, and then I thought, no, come on, it's a door of a car that isn't going to be made. There's got to be a limit. No, I read on anyway. It was quite fascinating for it. Okay, we're looking at the future of things. We're looking at how long things take. Let's just take this little bit of a leap to the past, because you mentioned it already, emulators. I honestly wasn't aware that you couldn't have emulators on iPhones and iPads before. I presume it's because what they were emulating was copyright or something. But is that changed? That is all over now.
It's so complicated. So to start, Apple didn't allow emulation on iPhone or any of its products before. I mean, on the Mac, of course, you can go install an emulator that... the Mac's different, but on iPhone and iPad and Vision Pro, you can't go to the App Store and download an app that lets you play Game Boy ROMs. And when I say a ROM, it's literally the read-only memory of the original hardware. So this is where it gets tricky. To legally emulate a game, you have to own the cartridge or disk that it originally was developed with, have the ability to remove the ROM from the disk onto your computer, and then what the emulator does is take that ROM and pretend to basically tell it, hey, I am a Game Boy Color, I am a Nintendo 64, and I'm going to run this as if I was that system, and the processing power of the computer needs to be adequate enough, and of course it is, to run a layer on top of its own sublayer of all of this code saying, hey, I'm a Nintendo 64, runs the ROM, good to go. Technically, you paid for the original cartridge, so you technically own the ROM, so you technically are legally allowed to play the emulator. The problem is, this is where it gets tricky, it is very easy to go online and just grab a copy of Pokemon Yellow from a website, and again, this can be debated to the ends of the earth. I own a copy of Pokemon Yellow. It's sitting in my room. Does that mean I can go download the ROM from the internet and be legally allowed to play it on an emulator? Who knows? This stuff hasn't really been tried in court too much. And Nintendo's actually, funny enough, never sued over it. Not specifically for these old consoles. They did recently win a legal battle and are owned millions of dollars and shut down a small company that created an emulator for Nintendo Switch, and they won only because they broke the encryption from Nintendo Switch in order to get the emulator to work, which violates the Digital Market Copyright Act or whatever. So, long story short, for iOS to be allowed to have an emulator, it's not a legal question. It's always been legally able. Google Play Store is full of emulators. You can download them all day long, from GameCube to PlayStation Portable. Even modern consoles are starting to get emulators. The issue is, where are you getting the ROMs from and the legality of it? So Apple has very specifically phrased this to place the legality on the developer of the emulator. And if Nintendo decides to go after anyone, they would go after the developer. And to answer your question, why hasn't this been allowed before? Who knows? This feels very much like the porn side of things. Apple doesn't allow pornography on the App Store. Just straight up, go download this app. You can't go download a Pornhub app to your phone. And just because Apple's like, it's available elsewhere, you know how to get it, go get it, whatever. We're not going to play party to that ecosystem. And I think they sort of took a similar moral stance of, many gray areas with emulation, so we're going to just be above that and choose not to participate. And that, I think that's if I had to guess, that's the reason why we didn't have emulation before.
Do you think that now that they're not actively stopping it, we're actually going to see lots of emulators coming, or is it just, it doesn't matter?
There's a problem.
Nobody's,
There's another problem. So, I've reached out to a couple of emulation developers to see if they have an answer, because I don't think anyone knows. Apple's the only reason why we know about this is because they updated their public guidelines and said retro game emulation is now allowable, but they didn't define exactly how that's allowable. And one of the technologies required for emulation is just in what is I always it's JIT. Is it just in time? Anyway,
oh, yeah.
calculations, basically, that happen in real time using direct access to the system's like RAM or whatever. Not to get too complicated, it basically accesses system level stuff that Apple normally doesn't allow. JIT is not allowed in iOS applications, but it is very much a requirement for more advanced emulators. I don't think you need JIT for a Game Boy. I'm pretty sure you can run a Game Boy entirely off of just the CPU without needing hardware level access. But once you get up to Nintendo 64, especially like GameCube, those things have to have access to everything. Because it's just not, you need more memory storage, you need more of all, again, just everything, graphics and all of that. It's intensive. It's doable. The iPhone can easily run a GameCube. That's not an issue. It can run a PlayStation 2, for that matter. Some PS3 games can even run. I remember they got a PS3 game to run on an iPad in 2014. So it's not an issue of performance. It's an issue of access. So while emulators are allowed, what will be allowed is in question. Who knows? I can't say Delta as it exists today. Delta is the emulator that lets you run everything from a Super Nintendo to a Nintendo 64. And no newer. You can't run PlayStation on that or anything. But up to the 64-bit era, it's all able to be run on Delta. I don't think he can. Riley Testa can bring that to the App Store as it exists today, because it would require too many things Apple would not allow access to. So maybe we'll see some very dedicated Game Boy emulators, dedicated Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. But again, I don't know what Apple's going to allow here, and we'll just have to wait and see the first rejection come through. Because once someone's rejected, they'll make it known, and I'm sure we'll write about it.
Yeah. I realize the reason I've not paid any attention to emulators at all is that they're always emulating games, and for whatever reason, I don't happen to play games. But games are not made by the people who made the things you're emulating. So if I buy a Game Boy, I haven't bought all of the games for it. How do people get? I don't know. I don't know enough. Is there a name of a famous Game Boy app? Tetris or whatever. How do I buy Tetris for Game Boy into a Game Boy emulator?
We could do an entire podcast, like not just an episode. I could literally do a 100 episode podcast on this.
Wow.
Okay. There's a lot of issues in the game industry right now. One of them is preservation, and anyone listening who's paid attention to this knows that there's software out there, not just software, but especially specifically video games, that will never be played again because it no longer exists. It's lost to history because of bit rot, damage to cartridges, limited sales of certain things. It's just gone. Licensing won't let us rebuild it, won't let us recreate it. There's laws tying up things everywhere. The way old licensing worked in a lot of games, like on PlayStation, Sony would have an entire game made by Naughty Dog and published, but and while Sony helped publish that game, they can't bring it to the PS5 as a remaster because there's one song in the game that was specifically licensed from an artist that won't relicense it for the remake. So they would have to go in and edit the library in the software. But in order to edit it, they would have to contact different copyright protection holders. And it becomes this whole legal battle that's not worth having. So it just never gets done. So that's why a lot of times when Nintendo announces, oh, we have the online store with emulation. Right now on Nintendo Switch, you can emulate Nintendo 64 and Game Boy because they built it into the system. And it's part of Nintendo Online. You can go play old games. Great. Not all of them, because so many of them are caught in that limbo. And again, because of the digital nature of it, you don't own it. Nintendo's not selling it. And no one, and the only people making money from it is Nintendo. So the original copyright holders are kind of left out of the loop as well. So again, long story short, it's complicated. You can't go online and give the original maker of Tetris, I think, who died recently. Anyway, you can't give them any money. And you can't give whoever owns the copyright to Tetris right now, you can't give them any amount of money. They don't care. They don't want it to play the Game Boy Color version of Tetris in an emulator. It doesn't exist. My only hope is that Apple's lifting of this barrier could open the door, and I am totally for this. I know a lot of people wouldn't be because they like the emulation is free, legal gray area, sure, sure. I would love if Apple talked to Sony to get a PlayStation emulator, talked to Nintendo to get a Nintendo emulator, went through all of these doors to get the software that can be run, buyable in their own app stores on iOS, but we're a long way from that. But again, regardless, this does not mean tomorrow you'll be able to go and pay Nintendo for Pokemon Yellow on your phone. It's just the only way to do that is to download an emulator and get the ROM, and how you get the ROM is up to you. That's all I can say.
Okay. I feel like light the blue touch paper or yellow and walk away from it. That's the past and possibly the future of emulators. Let's do one last thing. I'm really keen to know what you think about this. The future of the iPhone and particularly AI, because today as we record this, investment bank JP Morgan has said, nah, iPhone 16 Pro, that's not going to have any AI hardware stuff in it. It's going to be all in the iPhone 17 Pro. And I don't know how they know these things, but they're very, very confident about it. I think because we know Apple has been pretty blatant that AI is going to be a part of iOS 18 coming this June and September. I think we assumed the next iPhone would be AI ready. But is JP Morgan sensible and we're all wrong? Am I all wrong?
What's the nicest word I can say on this podcast? I'll say bull hockey.
Okay. I was going to say chocolate's a nice word, but that's not the kind of thing you mean. No, okay. Yes, okay. Yeah, and if you prefix that word with other words beginning with letters towards the start of the alphabet, if we say that, yeah?
It's okay. It's nonsense because clearly these people don't know anything they're talking about. There's already hardware in the iPhone for AI. There's hardware in all of these devices. Apple's Macs, iPads, Vision Pro has chipsets dedicated to neural processing, which is what we actually mean when we say AI. I want to see that movie, what we actually talk about when we talk about AI. I just look, no. That's all I got to say is no. The neural engine's already there. This goes back to this naming convention that's total nonsense. I understand how AI and ML are different, but again, they're branches of each other. AI may be a more advanced version of it, but the naming is total nonsense. The technology you need to run AI is already here. And you can run these things locally on device. A lot of apps let you do that already. So, again, total nonsense. The iPhone 16 will absolutely have a neural engine. It'll probably be more powerful. And again, they might even have, if I had to guess, again, because Apple wants to be buzzworthy this time, they're mentioning AI. They even, with the M3 MacBook Air, they actually, in the press release, talk about AI and how the M3 MacBook Air lets you do certain things with it. And I thought that was an indication of what we're going to see. So I guarantee you, I will put money on it. iPhone 16, there will be mention of AI. Not only that, there was probably going to be a new processor alongside the Neural Engine, or they're going to call it Neural Engine Pro or something, that is specifically called out as this is built for AI and AI processing, and it will make everything in iOS 18 much more pronounced. Everything we gave you in WWDC, it's this times a million or whatever, right? But it's already there, so I don't know what they're talking about.
Do you think there's any chance Apple will just rename the neural engine, call it the AI engine that we've just invented and had for years?
Nah, I'm okay. As well. I think that's very unlikely. There's two paths here, and one's, I think they're equally possible. I think Apple might just stick with AI because it's the market term and people know what it means, but there's equally as much chance, because we're talking about Apple here, that they'll come out with their own term. They could call it neural processing. They could call it something else, but Apple likes their marketing terms. We're not spatial computing. We're not in virtual reality. We're spatial computing, right?
Yeah,
everyone knows what virtual reality is. Almost no one knows what spatial computing is. Of course, you can probably figure it out based on the name, but you probably have to explain it. And that's Apple's marketing, is you can kind of figure it out, but you might have to explain it the first time. Again, it'll probably be obvious. Computer intelligence, some kind of marketing term. But I don't know. I at this point, as much as Tim Cook has said it and as much as it's shown up in PR, I think we're locked into the term AI as much as I hate it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not massively keen on machine learning as a term either, but I do prefer it to AI.
It kind of makes sense. I mean, the machine isn't learning, so it is, I suppose, not true, and it, just as much as untrue as artificial intelligence is, the machine learning isn't learning anything. You're giving it building blocks to make decisions, I suppose. But again, even the word decisions is wrong. It's not making a decision. So maybe we just need new words. I don't know.
I actually got a little, this is AI related, but slightly off the point. I got a little depressed looking through Twitter. I mean, who doesn't get depressed looking through Twitter? But I stumbled across something. I know the thing that you kind of read it and you went on, and when I went back, I couldn't find it again, so I can't remember the names or who was doing it, but it was an example of AI describing a photograph. And the spiel was something about how clever it was and how it had, you know, no biases, because we know all the Google Gemini stuff about biases. And the caption for this photograph was girl in a hat on a train. And no, she was an adult woman. So that had a bias in it already. And it's a bias that the people who made it don't see as a bias. And
there's so many things wrong with that description. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were right. It's clever.
How do you even know it's a hat, right?
True.
What are you to say? Who are you, sir, to define what a hat is? No, I do find it. I find it very funny. Again, the tech bros of the internet are always entertainment for me. Pull out the popcorn.
Do remind me of all those capture photographs of click on the bridges, and you look at it and you think, well, that isn't a bridge, but it doesn't agree unless I click on it. It's like a particular shaped sign or something.
It reminds me a lot of people, not to get political, but there's people today who refer to the civil rights movement as if it was 100 years ago. But it was your parents were alive for it, correct? So, think about it today. You remember, I don't know, 1867 when Google misidentified black people as gorillas? Wow, right? Like, it was 2015 or so when that happened. This is all still so new, and to call it anything other than an experiment is beyond me. I don't understand the people out there in the world. I see so many articles coming out. I fired my entire team of yada whatever and hired an AI and it did this, and it's just like, no, you're going to go bankrupt tomorrow. That's not how this works.
One thing I thought JP Morgan had a point about, I should explain, JP Morgan's note, it was investment firm talking to its clients. So Apple Insider saw the note of what was done, and they had this big claim about when AI hardware would come. But it was really about advising when the best point is to invest in Apple. Now, I look at that, and if you really do believe that AI is going to cause a pent-up demand, like JP Morgan says 5G did, and I think they're right, well, then surely now, while the stock is in a bad shape, is the time to do it. But they're saying, no, within these months of this time of that launch, it was the best time for 5G, so it will be for AI and all this stuff. But another reason for this whole thing about don't do it until next year was this year, people don't actually know a use case for AI and on an iPhone. And I realized I don't. What can Apple possibly say to me that AI will do in my iPhone that will make me want to buy it straight away?
Let's do a callback and see if anyone remembers. I described cryptocurrency in the blockchain as if the caveman invented the wheel and then used it as a table. That's...
Okay.
Right. Like, that's basically what crypto is to the blockchain. The blockchain is an important piece of technology. It's going to enable a lot of interesting things. But then someone came along and said, what if we could use it for money? And then they made one of the biggest mistakes ever known in human history, creating the perfect, most griftable thing to ever grift the internet. Blockchain, still important, still going to be cool when people figure out what it's used for. But it is not a table, it's a wheel. So I think there's a similar thing here going on with AI. It's not a chatbot. The chatbots are interesting toys. I like the idea that I can go have a conversation with a computer. It's not a human. It doesn't exist. I can say whatever nonsense I want to it and get stuff back. It's a good giggle fest, great. I'm not going to use it to write my college dissertation on medical history or something. So I think people have mistook the technology for what it is. Again, the name intelligence implies something that isn't there. It is not intelligent. We're telling it what to say, and it's saying it, and we're applauding it. Like, look how interesting this is. It's doing exactly what I told it to do. It's intelligence. Like, no, that's I think by definition the opposite of intelligence. But in any case, AI, the practicality of it, what it actually will be good for, and what, and it's the most boring thing ever, it will just take the things we already do and make them easier, make them faster in ways that honestly will probably be invisible to most people. Mm-hmm. Processing video, making better images, editing out objects, making more realistic renders, you know, better spell check. All of these things are kind of boring, but they make our lives better. They make our work better. We produce better content. We have more time to either, you know, live our lives and have personal time, or make more content. Again, this technology is an accelerant. It allows us to do more or be more productive so we can do less, right? And that is the beauty of this technology. It is not a chatbot that will sell you a Honda Civic on the internet. So,
okay, what I'm hearing there is, until we get AI, you need friends you can phone up and be silly with. Well, no, you don't use the phone. You need friends that you can special persona. I was going to say you could call me, but I haven't got a headset. Okay, I'm not as addicted in the idea of chatting. I suppose every time I talk to a chatbot, it's because I'm trying to get support on something and there's a problem. A chatbot that was just interesting might change my mind about it.
We're using the technology wrong, right? It's the same thing. I believe we've had Wi-Fi. The first documented presence of the radio frequency for Wi-Fi was something stupid, like 1920 or something. Right? We've known stuff like this has existed, but we didn't know what it was used for until the advent of the computer. The first thing with Wi-Fi in it wasn't until the 1990s.
Yeah.
But the radio frequency was there. We knew what it was, right? We could use microwaves to do all kinds of interesting things, but we didn't build a microwave oven until, you know, late into the 19th century. It's just one of those things where the technology's there. We don't know what to do with it yet, but I think that we're closer to utility than we think. Everyone's like, oh, you know, what's the practicality of having it on the iPhone? I'm actually excited for iOS 18 and iPhone 16 to bring this technology to the front, because I think Apple is going to be a good steward of this technology, and they will give us something useful, unlike what Google and Bing and these other companies have done. They've given us toys. And increasingly in the last year, we've been moving away from toys to tools. You know, you see Adobe Firefly and these things come along. But again, they're still playing in the field of, ooh, what if I tell it to make me an image of a giraffe and it gives me a giraffe? Great, that's stupid. It's a fun toy. It might has some utility. I wrote an article last week about robots. I asked a thing to make me an image of a robot built by Apple, and it did. Great. That took 2 seconds. I didn't have to pay a render artist to go do it. It doesn't look that good, but it was usable for a 2-minute article that people are going to read once and never look at again. Fine. That's a utility that comes in handy. It saves time. It saves money. That's the whole point. It's a tool. But when you go to the other side of things, when people want it to change their life and replace jobs, it's not that, and I don't think it ever will be. There's always going to be a human element, and I think that's important for the creation of anything.
Right. So I'm just making a quick note to check with the Render Artists Union if they know about this and what's going on.
Oh, you know, you want to know a job that's going to go out of business, speaking of, because okay. of AI? The perfect... Yeah. J.P. Morgan. stock... If you want one of the biggest threats in the industry right now is stock analysis. Humans are terrible with numbers. Robots, they're really good at that. So if you want to know what stocks to buy next year, you're not going to be going to Jim Cramer on CNBC so you can hit something with a hammer. You're just going to go type in, when do I buy Apple stock? And it'll tell you, well, every time they announce a product, it dips. And then when it releases, it goes back up. So buy it on the dip. And then that's all you need. Congratulations. You've just eradicated the entire analyst market where they make up nonsense to make numbers change.
I feel like I should do one of those really fast radio things like, well, Celia's advice is not indicative of something.
Okay. Just say it and then speed it up in post.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. One last thought, just because you put this in my head, talking about writing something. I'm researching a piece, and it meant watching Steve Jobs' 1997 Fireside Chat, as it was called, where he's just back at Apple. Developers are very unhappy with what's been going with Apple, and they are actually really insulting, and he manages to turn them around with a really fine piece of rhetoric, really. It's a great presentation. It's not a presentation, it's off the cuff, seemingly, but it's superbly well done. And one part of it is he was arguing that Apple was developing this technology like OpenDoc, if you even remember that, and then trying to sell it, whereas he knew, he had learnt, he had been burnt by the fact that actually what you should be doing is trying to make something for the customers, not fit what you've already got. And that sounds like just what you said there about Apple being a good steward where everybody else mm-hmm. is doing toys. I think you're right there.
What year was that that he did the
I think it was 97.
All right, so let me see if I remember OpenDoc in 97. Yes. So Saturday morning I woke up and had a bowl of cereal while I was watching Power Rangers using the antenna to adjust the signal because we didn't have cable. I was 6 years old. So, yeah, I definitely caught that Fireside Chat.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I just had to make fun, if only because sometimes you forget how old some of this stuff is. And it still fascinates me to no end, like, where Apple has come from as a technology company from the 80s to today.
Well, speaking of forgetting, though, you can forget phoning me. That's it. That's it. We're done.
No comment on you, William, of course.
Yeah, okay. I was at presentations about OpenDoc. Anyway, apart from me, how can other people get in touch with you?
Well, I am on Mastodon. You can find me at HillyTech most places. If you just search it, it'll probably pop up. You can get me on X. I'm not really there, but if you ping me, I'll get notified and I'll reply. I've actually just started experimenting with more Fediverse stuff, by the way. Just a quick plug. There's an Instagram alternative on Fediverse called Pixel Fed, and I am there trying to post more photos, and that could be fun. So you can find me there at HillyTech, at PXLMO, whatever. You'll find me. But again, best way, usually, like William, go to the article, any article I've written, click the email button in the top left corner, and it will open a draft just for you to write to me, and you can get me that way anytime. We love hearing about what you think of the show. We get some really nice emails from listeners. You can always write in and ask questions, or as we're about to dive into for premium subscribers, Apple Insider Plus, if you have any suggestions for what topics you'd like us to talk about, a good way to do it is via the email. So what about you, William?
Well, I was just thinking, you don't want to give out your phone number or anything.
Social security number, credit card.
You even remember your phone number. Oh, I'd take that. I'll keep a copy of those for you. Yeah, for me, it is actually more and more it's email. I'm quite shocked. I mean, I've always known I love email, but I think maybe am I just retreating from the Twitters of the world? I certainly don't spend as much time in any of them as I did. I'm not enjoying them as much as I used to, but I'll never stop loving email. So, mm-hmm. yes, click on the article stuff to get me. But that's it for this time. Unless, as Wes points out, you're an Apple Insider Plus subscriber, there's a bit more rambling, nattering, and hopefully useful information to come. Otherwise, that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to our sponsor, Samebox. And Wes and I will talk to you next week.